connected with them in our minds. The reason is this. The name aphorism suggests, to me at least, a pithy sentence of very general application, a piece of proverbial wisdom that may be quoted in a good many sets of circumstance, and which will almost bear on its face the evidence of its truth. But with a sutra, the case is different. It comes from the same roots as the word so, which means indeed a thread, suggesting, therefore, a close-knit, consecutive chain of argument. Not only has each sutra a definite place in the system, but further taken out of this place, it will be almost meaningless, and will by no means be self-evident. So I have thought best to adhere to the original word. The sutras potentially are as closely knit together, as dependent on each other as the propositions of Euclid, and can no more be taken out of their proper setting. In the second part of the first book, the problem of the emergence of the spiritual man is further dealt with. We are led to the consideration of the barriers of his emergence, of the overcoming of the barriers, and of certain steps and stages in the ascent from the ordinary consciousness of practical life to the finer, deeper, radiant consciousness of the spiritual man. Book 1. 1. Om. Here follows instruction in union. Union, here as always in the scriptures of India, means union of the individual soul with the Oversoul, of the personal consciousness with the divine consciousness, whereby the mortal becomes immortal and enters the eternal. Therefore, salvation is, first, freedom from sin and the sorrow which comes from sin, and then a divine and eternal well-being, wherein the soul partakes of the being, the wisdom and glory of God. 2. Union, spiritual consciousness, is gained through control of the versatile psychic nature. The goal is the full consciousness of the spiritual man, illuminated by the divine light. Nothing except the obdurate resistance of the psychic nature keeps us back from the goal. The psychical powers are spiritual powers run wild, perverted, drawn from their proper channel. Therefore, our first task is to regain control of this perverted nature, to chasten, purify, and restore the misplaced powers. 3. Then the seer comes to consciousness in his proper nature. Egotism is but the perversion of spiritual being. Ambition is the invasion of spiritual power. Passion is the distortion of love. The mortal is the limitation of the immortal. When these false images give place to true, then the spiritual man stands forth luminous as the sun when the clouds disperse. 4. Heretofore, the seer has been enmeshed in the activities of the psychic nature. The power and life, which are the heritage of the spiritual man, have been caught and enmeshed in psychical activities, instead of pure being in the divine. There has been fretful, combative, egotism, its hand against every man. Instead of the light of pure vision, there have been restless senses, have been re- and imaginings. Instead of spiritual joy, the undivided joy of pure being, there has been self-indulgence of body and mind. There are all real factors, but distorted from their true nature and goal. They must be extricated, like gems from the matrix, like the pith from the reed, steadily, without destructive violence. Spiritual powers are to be drawn forth from the psychic meshes. 5. The psychic activities are 5. They are either subject or not subject to the 5 hindrances. Book 2, Part 3. The psychic nature is built up through the image-making power, the power which lies behind and dwells in mind pictures. These pictures do not remain quiescent in the mind. They are kinetic, restless, stimulating to new acts. Thus the mind image of an indulgence suggests and invites to a new indulgence. The picture of past joy is framed in regrets or hopes. And there is the ceaseless play of the desire to know, to penetrate to the essence of things, to classify. This too busies itself ceaselessly.